Welcome, friends, to another episode of the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast. I'm so grateful that you are here today. I know you have so many good options to choose from in the world of podcasts, and I am so grateful that you chose to come back today. And if it's your first show, welcome. Thank you for joining me. I'm so excited to have you, and this episode is going to knock your socks off. But before we dive in, I wanted to talk to you about today's sponsor for the show, which is Rasa. Rasa Coffee Alternative is a delicious, healthy coffee substitute that doesn't have coffee in it that is made from adaptogenic herbs. Coffee actually steals energy from tomorrow to use today. So drinking coffee actually doesn't give us energy. It just borrows energy from tomorrow. And this is why I love Rasa so much. The adaptogenic herbs in these blends actually support and boost your body's adrenal glands, which are often really tired if we have blood sugar dysregulation. And that helps to restore your body's natural energy. And it also helps to boost your body's resiliency towards stress. So the way you brew these coffee alternatives is in a French press for about 10 to 15 minutes. You can have them really at any time of the day. They have all different ones. They have calming blends. They have bold blends or just their traditional original, which is so good. And you can have this in place of coffee or for an extra boost, like, you know, that 3 p.m. crash that so many of us get. You can have that for an extra boost in energy, mental clarity, and alertness. And personally, I find that if I have Rasa every single day, my overall daily energy improves, my sleep improves, and so many of my clients who have blood sugar crashes really see improvement with their blood sugar levels when having Rasa on a regular basis. My personal favorite is the cacao. I love mixing it with some full fat coconut milk. It is so good. And the taste really grows on you over time. You just come to like love this nice hot beverage that you're having. And I also recently tried the Joy Tonic and I am obsessed with it. I didn't think I was gonna like it. It has like lemon balm and cacao. I was like, oh, I don't think I'm gonna like this mix. It's so good. So you can try Rasa. You can go to wearerasa, that's rasa.com. You can use the code Danielle Hamilton Health, all one word, to get 15% off your order. And they also have a sampler pack. If you just want to try all of the blends, go for it. I will say I don't recommend their creamer personally because it's made from oat milk powder. So that's the only thing I don't recommend. I love all their other products. And my health, my sleep has been killing it lately. And I really attribute this to partially to having Rasa every single day. I see a huge, huge difference. I'm also recovering from being sick and it's really helping me get my energy back. So definitely check out wearerasa.com and use the code Danielle Hamilton Health for 15% off your order. Okay, so I'm really excited because today I have a great friend of mine on the podcast, Danielle Dame. She is a sugar freedom coach and speaker, and she is wonderful. I can't wait to bring you today's interview, so let's jump into today's show. I'm Dani Hamilton, and you're listening to the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast. Our blood sugar affects how we feel at every second of the day and also has huge impacts on our long-term health. In this show, I'll help you understand more about your blood sugar and give you practical tips to help you gain more energy, have better sleep, crush cravings, have clear skin, happy moods, burn fat, and so much more. This show is about taking action and taking your health destiny into your own hands. Are you ready to feel better? Let's do it. Hey friends, welcome back to the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast. Thank you again for joining me. If you are loving the show, it would really, really help me if you left a review or rating on iTunes podcast. That's that little purple app if you have an iPhone. And if you don't, you can always go ahead and leave a screenshot on your stories. You can tag me and I will share that post. I love to hear how you're loving the show and it just really helps to get the word out to other people who are also on this journey and I would appreciate it so, so much. And I really just, I'm so happy that you're here with me. So today's episode is an episode that I have been wanting to bring you because I know that when I met Danielle, I interviewed her on a live on my Instagram. And everything she was talking about, I had like all these clients popping into my mind and past people who I've worked with who really need the work that Danielle is putting out into the world. This is all the mindset work, the inner work, all those other things that really need to be right to keep us on this journey, to keep us consistent. So many of us find ourselves unable to stick with something. So it's, you know, you maybe go off sugar for a few weeks and then there's a party and then you're back on. And then maybe you do it for 30 days because you did a challenge and then the 30 days ends and you're like, oh, I'm just dying to have a brownie. So you have that and then it's all over. Or maybe you're even a person who's been off sugar for 6 months or a year or longer, but then something really stressful happens and you can't seem to find yourself being able to stay on this wagon, you know, the proverbial wagon, you've fallen off the wagon and you can't get back on. And this is not something that is rare. This is something that's really, really common. And I work with people, obviously, if you've listened to this podcast, you know that I work on the physical stuff. We work on, you know, changing our macronutrients, making sure we're eating a nutrient-dense diet, looking at the lifestyle pieces of making sure we're getting in a parasympathetic state, we're removing toxins, we're working out, we're moving our bodies, we're incorporating really healthy supportive supplements or nutrients or nutrient-dense foods to really help our body to balance our blood sugar so we stop having cravings coming from there. But what I don't specialize in is all this inner work, all this mindset stuff. And today, Danielle is going to give us this amazing, incredible list of areas to look at. And I'm telling you, this felt like a therapy session for me. I was having all these light bulb moments. You know that emoji that has the like exploding head because you're just like, your mind is blown? That is how I felt this entire episode. I'm like, oh my goodness, I have so much work to do. And it's just, it's great. It's not like, oh, I have so much work to do, I better get to it. It's like, look at this opportunity for me to continue learning about myself and improving myself so I can develop a better relationship with food, a better relationship with sugar. And overall, this is not just about sugar. This is not just about food. This is how to improve every single aspect of your life. So we talk about boundaries as one of the pieces of emotional work or inner work to do. And it's like, I'm really good at setting boundaries around food, but what I'm not so good at is setting boundaries in some other areas of my life. So maybe you're going to start to see that, you know, some of the, there's just maybe some cracks in your foundation and you can sort of patch these holes and learn places that need more of your attention, that need more work. And then you can find the appropriate resource to help you do that. Maybe it's a book, maybe it's joining Danielle's Sugar Freedom Program, but there are so many areas to explore. And if you are not able to be consistent, I really don't want you to feel bad about yourself because this is not what I teach and what Danielle teaches. It's all about, hey, this is not about willpower. Like, you're not a weak person. It's not that you ran out of willpower and that you're a terrible person because everyone can do it and you can't. Maybe there's some things in your past that are really shaping your beliefs and your lens and it's creating limiting beliefs that are keeping you stuck. So I don't want to give anything away because this is so good, but I am so excited for you to listen to this episode and really, really dive into this inner work that can really set us up for success. And like Danielle says in the episode, this is like a lifetime journey. This is something that we're going to keep working at. We're going to keep learning and growing and expanding. And it's awesome. It's a fun piece of the journey, but it's also really hard work. And this is the stuff that most of us love to just ignore. It's like, oh, just give me a meal plan, just give me the supplements, I'll do it. It's like, this is the stuff that will really, really move the needle and really help us see so much change in our life. And so if you're at a point where you're like, I feel great in a lot of other areas, but I can't seem to make things stick, this is the podcast for you. So absolutely. And if you can even make it stick, like I can, you know, with diet, that, like I said, that's easy for me to set boundaries in terms of my diet. But there's so much of the stuff that she talks about that I'm like, I feel called out. Oh my goodness, I have this stuff. So this podcast is so relevant for every person listening. You will learn something incredible listening to this podcast. I can't wait for you to listen. So without any further ado, here is Danielle Dame. Okay, so I am here with my fellow Danielle Dame, who is a sugar freedom coach and speaker. Welcome to the show, Danny. I'm so excited you're here.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for having me, Danny. This is so much fun. And it's so weird calling someone else Danny. Usually it's the other way around.
Yeah, same. I know. And I was just saying offline that it's funny that I'm seeing you here on my podcast because we Zoom a lot and we do co-working, we do masterminding, and it's, you know, in this world of solopreneurship, entrepreneurship online, you know, we don't have coworkers, so we make our own. And so I loved meeting Danielle, and she interviewed me on the Quit Sugar Summit, and that's how we got to know each other. But her work around sugar is, I always feel like I wish this is the stuff that I knew, because I know that so many of my clients, so many of my listeners and followers need the work that you are putting into the world. And this is what you talk about, like the inner work, these foundational pieces that are at the root of our dependency on sugar. And so you talk about how can someone go for like 6 months, a year being off sugar, and then all of a sudden they go back into these old habits and patterns. And it's like, what is causing this? What is at the root of this self-sabotage or these things that are holding us back from really achieving this and making it stick? So I would love to hear from you, your experience, your discovery and journey through, you know, your experience with this stuff. And how did you get started in this whole world of sugar freedom?
Wow. Thank you so much for that intro. And what a big question. I mean, we could spend the next couple hours talking about this. I'm so passionate about this very topic. And I guess we'll start way back, you know, start a little backstory. Who am I? You know, my journey with sugar and sugar addiction started at childhood, like everyone's, right? Like, you know, the sugar was everywhere. There was dessert after dinner. I was rewarded with sugar all the time. My mom was very much a sugar addict. Well, my whole family was, and I didn't know it at the time. Obviously, it was just a part of life. And I think a lot of people just can relate with that. When we look back at our childhood, we're like, well, that's just how it was. I mean, everybody ate sugar and we were always hopped up on juice and you know, on white juice. Pasta. And, yeah, don't forget the juice. So I've always like really resonated with having a sweet tooth or loving like pasta, white rice and candy and chocolate and, you know, ice cream, right? It was like a food group to me. So, you know, fast forward, you know, off I go into my university years, you know, eating like a typical university student, you know, binging on pizza and pasta and not really knowing how to cook for myself yet. So it's just all the like fast food junk. But I would also eat a salad once in a while. And I was like, I'm okay, because I'm eating a salad, right? And I wasn't gaining weight yet. And I was going to the gym. So everything was like, okay, right? Like I was healthy and in my mind, right? Because I didn't know any different. And I just remember the flats of that like blue Gatorade we used to buy at Costco. We used to just like go to the gym, have a Gatorade just because, right? Like, oh my goodness. Now I look at those and I just have a physical repulsion to Gatorade. Anyway, so looking back at all of that, right, I know that, you know, there's no doubt I was overdosing on sugar, like most people, you know, for my whole life. And my wake up call really came from more of an emotional wake up call with the work that I was doing. So I left university and went off into actually the finance industry. And I worked at one of the banks here in Canada for 2 years. And I don't know if you knew this, Danny.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I worked in an office environment thinking that I was going to help people with their money and it was going to be really rewarding. And boy, was it quite the opposite. It was one of the most soul sucking, draining experiences of my life. It was an extremely toxic work environment for many, many reasons. The people, the culture of, you know, big companies like that, right? You know, I really wasn't recognized as an individual. And it was a very, very toxic environment is the best way to name it. And looking back at those 2 years, now I can see, looking back at the time, I was obviously just in it. I couldn't really see out of the fog, but I was in this constant depression. Like I was in this place of anxiety and stress and depression and pressure, you know, to get the work done. And, you know, I would come home every day from work late, exhausted, zero energy left to give to anyone else. My poor husband, like, didn't you know, recognize me, or we never connected. And I would come home, you know, exhausted, not wanting to think about what to cook for dinner. You know, we would get takeout or make pizza or pasta or something. I would grab a bottle of wine and I would go into the bath and I would watch Netflix and have wine. And often I would like pick up candy as well, or ice cream. Like, it was the like tornado of numbing out. And that was how I would like decompress after a draining day at work. And when I look back at that now, I can see that it was me completely numbing out and escaping and trying to deal with my depression and the total discontent that I had for my work, for my life, and what it had been. So, you know, this kind of vision of what it should look like versus like what the real adult world was. And it did take me a good 2 years of pretty much living this way, right? Living for the weekends and then just like drinking wine and eating junk, you know, in a way to like give me a dopamine hit, because I didn't have that at work. And I felt so disconnected from myself, from my higher self, from my purpose. And about just under 2 years of that, both my husband and I, he was also unhappy, similar in his job. And we both just took the first of many radical leaps of faith and trust in the net will appear. And we decided to quit our jobs and travel to South America for a year. So I've always wanted to learn Spanish. We've always wanted to do some extended travel together. So we said, there's got to be more to life. This is not it. This is not what we signed up for. And we quit and we left. We're like, we're out of here. We're going to, you know, on our soul finding journey. And that's exactly what that was. I mean, we spent a year traveling around, having incredible experiences, meeting different people, experiencing different cultures. And in that journey was where my curiosity started sparking around how people related with food and how other cultures were actually connecting with their food at a deeper level, not rushing through meals. Everybody makes their own food. They don't eat out at McDonald's every night. Everybody buys their food from a farmer, like a market. Like, there was just such a deeper connection with food and understanding where it came from and how to prepare it and, you know, spending mealtime together as a family. And it really just started having me reflect on my relationship with food and what was going on, you know, at home in this busy, fast-paced lifestyle where it's all about convenience and quick and things like that. So yeah, in that, fast forward sort of to the end of that year, and we'd actually been eating like junk for a while because we still hadn't kind of figured it out. And, you know, eating a lot of the processed food that could be eaten while we were traveling, right? We couldn't really bring a lot of fresh things with us. We're on 30-hour bus rides or plane rides or things like that. So it was a lot of junk. And towards the end, we really started feeling it on our bodies. Like, I think I'd always been feeling it in my body, but I really started being aware to the fact that I was exhausted all day and, you know, starting to gain weight, even though we were like walking everywhere. You know, you'd think you'd be not gaining weight, the amount of walking we were doing with our big backpacks. And, you know, really just a whole collection of things really brought me to a deeper understanding that something needed to change for me. And at the end, very end of that trip, we were actually spent 2 weeks at a yoga retreat in the middle of the Colombian jungle of all places, completely living off the land, which was something I'd never experienced before in my life. Mm-hmm. It was a very spiritual and eye-opening experience on many levels, but mostly with the sugar. So that was where I went through my sugar detox. And I always call it my accidental sugar detox because I had no idea what was going on. It was not on purpose. I didn't even know detoxing from sugar was a thing. But when I look back in hindsight, I had all the symptoms. I had the headache. I was exhausted. I had, you know, digestive issues. I would wake up hungry in the middle of the night for no reason, even though I'd eaten. Anyway, so my body was doing all sorts of weird things. And luckily that lasted for only, you know, about a week. And then we made it home and it was the contrast because I had gotten off sugar and I was just eating whole real foods off the land, no processed anything, that I started really noticing that I didn't have cravings and that my taste buds had changed. And these things that I used to want or look at and think were delicious, now I looked at and kind of thought were gross or I didn't want them. And that really sparked that curiosity for me. Like, what's going on here? You know, I used to love Starbucks caramel frappuccinos, but why don't I want one? Like, is there something wrong with me? Am I sick? Am I okay? So that was really like eye-opening for me, just noticing the contrast of my taste buds and cravings no longer being there. And that really was the tipping point for me in understanding that sugar had control over me, and that if I didn't change the way I was eating, I was going to follow in the genetic footsteps of my family, which is riddled with every single chronic disease you can think of. You know, my mom is still, you know, and her whole side of the family is very much an inspiration for me, because I can see that that's, if I don't look after myself, that's going to be my future. And it's not going to be the future that I want for myself. So I really had to get honest with myself. And, you know, that was kind of the start of my journey. And we came home from that trip and I really dove into getting off sugar, and that was a bumpy 2-year ride, you know, ups and downs and just a total mess, you know, trying to figure it out on my own, because I didn't know anybody else out there who was going through this or who was relating or struggling. And, you know, I'm so grateful that I went through that experience. It was 6 years ago now. And now, you know, it's my passion to help women navigate that journey and find what I call sugar freedom in a way that's a lot less painful than what I had to go through and doesn't take you 2 years to go through. 2 years is too long. It was exhausting. And I learned so much, and it was part of my journey. And now it's something that I love guiding women through and sharing. So I know that was kind of the Coles Notes, the long story of the Coles Notes. But what you asked me earlier, Dani, and to kind of, you know, dive into next is, you know, this inner work piece that I spend so much of my time talking about, and why is this a piece that should be in the conversation when we're talking about sugar? And I know you on your podcast, Dani, you talk so much about all of the physical aspects of why, right? Why we need to get off sugar and what it's doing to our blood sugar and how to manage that and what to eat and all these really, really important things. But one of the things that I really noticed and feel called to shout from the rooftops about is, you know, I started working with women specifically helping them get off sugar about 4 years ago. And really quickly in that first year, I realized that, you know, anybody could get off sugar for 30, 60, 90 days or 6 months. And nobody stayed on it. Like nobody stayed on track. So here's the thing, when those, you know, 3 months was up, and then one stressful situation happens and they're back in the ice cream, right? Back in the McDonald's drive-through. And, you know, it didn't matter how many good healthy habits we built or how long they were off sugar, or there seemed to be this constant pattern of quote unquote falling off the wagon and really reverting back to old patterns and habits. And I became really fascinated with the question of why is this happening? Like, as much as these women know they're connected with why they're doing this, they want to get off sugar, they have all these beautiful dreams and goals for themselves, why the self-sabotage? Like why the constant stumbling? And I started just observing for myself in my own journey, as well as with all these clients I was working with, and really starting to pay attention to what's really going on here, what's under the surface, like where's this coming from? Because obviously the food piece and the sugar is not actually the root cause. So this is where, you know, I really started diving deep into what's the root, like what's actually beyond what we're eating at a lower level that's dictating our addictions and also just our relationship with food in general. And through working with clients, and I said, you know, my own journey, I've realized there's a whole list of pieces that I call the root causes or the foundational pieces that, you know, if we think of, I'll give this an analogy for anyone to understand, right? When we think of building a house, right? We think of the foundation. And imagine trying to build a house on a foundation that has a whole bunch of cracks in it. Maybe there's like a corner missing over there, or there's like a big hole in the middle or a big crack down the right side. You try to build your house on that, it may stand for like 30, 60, 90 days. And then it's probably going to start breaking down, right? It's probably not going to stand. A windstorm's going to come in, a stressful situation's going to blow by, and your house is going to fall down. And this is what's happening with this conversation around food and sugar, because most people completely avoid the inner work. And that's what, you know, I would love to chat more about and just share the really quick Coles Notes today, because it's obviously a very, very deep conversations we could have with each of these. But I wanted to share with all of you today, you know, just plant seeds for you to feel into some of these foundational pieces that may be at the root of your patterns around sugar and food, that are maybe causing you to self-sabotage, that are maybe pulling you constantly back into the sugar dragon, I know as Danny calls it, you know, year after year, no matter how many times you've tried to give up sugar, you just can't seem to make it stick. And, you know, I firmly believe that there's these deep foundational pieces that are different for all of us, but at the same time, kind of the same. You know, there's been every woman I've worked with has had that deep-rooted emotional connection with sugar, right? So there's some things that are really universal and some things that might be just specific to ourselves, right? Maybe very specific, you know, traumas or pieces that we've gone through. So does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It's great. And all of, you know, your story is so fascinating. And I actually never heard all that from you before. So that was exciting to learn. And I really like that you were noticing that sugar had control over you. And that's why I talk about the sugar dragon, because that sugar dragon really can dictate what we're doing. We can feel, we can know why sugar is bad. We can have done this work. We can have done the, you know, the physical work of balancing our blood sugar. We can, you know, improve our digestion and we can do all these things. But like you said, if there is this inner work that has a really sloppy foundation or the foundation is sinking or whatever, then it's not going to hold. And especially through these stressful times. And I can't tell you how many times I have a client who says to me, like, I should be able to, you know, not do this when I'm, you know, when I'm stressful, I just want to get to a place where when I'm stressed out, like I can keep doing all the things that make me feel good. I'm like, well, if you know the answer to that, let me know. Cause I can't even do that. So maybe I need your program too, you know? So I'd love for you to dive into, to these, you know, foundations and root causes, this inner work, because this is something that I don't know about. And I'd love to learn more about for sure.
Awesome. Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And yeah, like I said, I've got a list here that I'll share right now with all of you, but please know that everything that I'm about to just pinpoint on for you is a huge topic. Okay.
Yeah.
This is like each of these could be a book, you know, a whole documentary, if not more. Like each of these are big. So I just wanted to give like a nice overview today, because any of you listening, just start paying attention to which ones that I share jump out at you, you know, which ones kind of hit you in the gut going, ooh, I think that's really going on for me. And then you can, I mean, feel free to reach out to me or do your own research and start diving into those and starting to heal those pieces. Because like you said, right, it is that exact thing. You know, we can get our bodies in tip-top shape and our hormones are balanced, and our guts are feeling great, but then somebody dies or there's a pandemic or our house burns down or we get fired, right? Like, life happens and it totally throws us if we aren't grounded, if we don't have that solid foundation. And one thing I'll say before I share this list too, please don't be afraid of any of these. This list is big and most of us have most of these things going on. And it can feel really overwhelming when you start diving into this inner work, but please know that it is so worth it when you do. Okay. It is so freeing and ultimately happiness and joy and freedom that come from getting centered and connected with yourself so that food no longer has that control over you is one of the most incredible journeys you'll ever go on in your life. And yes, it's going to be difficult. Yes, it's going to hurt, maybe emotionally, maybe physically, I don't know. But it's so, so worth it. Okay. So just know that, you know, you're supported in this and it is really, really important. And this is why most people avoid the inner work, right? This is why most people don't talk about it because, and I've even come up across this, right, with my clients, most people want to avoid this because learning how to feel again sucks, right? Learning who you really are and understanding your true nature and learning to love yourself again. And it's difficult. It's hard. And we tend to just want to do the things like, give me the meal plan. I can get off sugar. It's black and white. It's easy compared to this inner work. So yeah. Please don't be that person. Please don't be that person that ignores this and just know that it's not a race. This isn't about like hearing this list from me today and then all of a sudden having to have all this sorted out by next month or by the end of the year or even next year. I'm a good 6 years into my inner work journey and there's still a lot of work for me to do, but it is honestly, I can say that right here in front of all of you today, it is my new addiction. Like learning about myself and building awarenesses about myself and failing and growing and like learning through that is something that I'm so passionate about. I love it. When mm-hmm. something happens, I'm like, ooh, that's cool. What did I learn? Like, I'm learning something about myself, or this is really difficult, and that's okay. So I just wanted to share that, caveat, right? Don't be afraid to do the work, because it's extremely worth it. And, you know, you have to experience that for yourself, of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, the list.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, number one. Okay, the first one is obviously our emotional health. So this emotional piece, this is one of the ones that I see with everybody that I've ever spoken with. A lot of us have this propensity to bottle up what we're feeling. And this is something that our society teaches us to do. You know, we're also not taught how to, not only how, but the importance of expressing emotions. So our society teaches us to stuff them down, right? You scrape your knee as a kid, stop crying, let's go have ice cream. We're taught to get out of any uncomfortable emotion as quick as possible. So whether it's sadness or grief or depression or anxiety, it feels really icky in the body. Therefore, we want to escape as quick as possible. And we do that really easily with food. So a part of that emotional journey, I could talk about this for hours, but is really learning how to feel again and learning that feeling is safe in your body. A lot of people feel that, and I can relate to this as well, that it's not safe to feel, you know, for a lot of us. I encourage anybody listening to start just thinking about the conversations or even the energy or lack of conversation around emotions in your household growing up. Most of my clients always, you know, share things like, well, it was just never talked about. You weren't allowed to share emotions, or we had to tiptoe around mom because we never wanted to upset mom. Right. So we learned to always just put on a brave face. Right. All these things that like our society really pushes on us to not honor your emotions and not feel them. So now we're in this day and age where we have years of pent up emotions and grief and sadness and anger and really intense emotions that we've never let out. Mm-hmm. And we're coping and we're escaping and we're using food now as that quote unquote tool to deal with daily worry or anxiety or stress, right? On a daily basis, or pandemics, right? Like now we turn to food because we don't have the emotional like patterning and tools, emotional tools that we just were never taught. So no guilt, no shame, no blame. It's just something we weren't taught. And we need to relearn that for ourselves, which can be a difficult journey, but is really important. So
yeah. And the emotional I can see how that feeling uncomfortable, feeling what we perceive to be a negative emotion, how we want to get out of that feeling right away. So I just related with that so hard. It's just like, as soon as you feel something, it's like, I don't want to feel like this. So you're just in the kitchen. It's like, how did I even get here? So it's just like, you know, like you're just there, like you're sighing, you're upset about it. And then boom, you're in the cabinet. Like, how did you even get here? It's like, that's why, because and I think this is why they teach us, you know, do yoga and meditation and sit with your feelings, because you need to be able to be aware of them and be like, oh, I feel really, you know, upset right now, or I feel really frustrated right now. And I recognize that, and that's okay. Like, it's okay to have these strong emotions. And so I feel that I'm sure some of the work is learning to sit with these emotions instead of, like you were saying, numbing out. So like immediately you come home, you're like, oh, I need to quote decompress. That hit me hard too, because how many people say they need to decompress when they come home? And it's like, what do you mean by decompress? You mean numb out on the couch with Netflix, with snacks and wine and, you know, whatever. So oh, everything you're saying, I'm like, light bulb. So good.
Yay. Yeah. It's such an important conversation. And I want to point this out too. I mean, in this conversation around emotions, step one is actually learning how to feel again. And that sounds weird, because most people are like, I can feel, but I actually work with a lot of clients who have completely disconnected from their emotional body, right? And this is a very, very common trauma response, which, by the way, we all have trauma, whether it's big T or little T, right? We all carry baggage. And it's very common to disconnect, to just learn how to not feel in a way. So I work with a lot of clients who are just numb. And any of you resonating with that, listening to this, just know that you're not alone and it's okay. It's just a response in your body. It's a survival mechanism. Your body is trying to help you get through the world and stay alive by kind of disconnecting because it is perceived too painful to feel, right? So reconnecting with your body is a big part of that for a lot of people. And then learning how to identify like what those emotions actually feel like And that is often the biggest piece of work for people. And that's the hardest part. Most people just stop because it gets too hard.
Yeah.
Right. And then from there, once you learn to honor that, you know, when emotions come up, and this is still a practice for me, you know, when something, I remember it was 2 years ago, my husband's dad passed away and I was alone. He was with the family without me, we were apart. And that was the first time that, like, mentally and very intentionally, I set out to, like, process grief. You know, in the past I would have, like, cause grief is one of the heaviest emotions. And I'd started doing this emotional work and understanding about my emotional connection to food. And I was like, okay, here's a heavy one. This feels really uncomfortable. And I'm going to do everything in my power to let myself feel it and cry and do what I needed to do. And I actually took myself away camping by myself, cause nature is one of my, like, one of the best tools for processing. So I took myself camping for a couple of nights and I just cried and I had a bonfire and then I cried and then I slept and then So it was a really interesting experience in my body. Like, just, I had to, you know, we all have to train ourselves to, like, to know that we're okay. And it was a beautiful experience because, like, 5 days later, I was good. Grief was gone instead of carrying it for years, right? Like, most people, we stuff it down and then we carry these emotions for years because we've never actually processed them or allowed them to come up, right? Or we try to make ourselves stop crying. I would love if everybody just stopped doing that. If you feel tears come on, let them flow. Please stop trying to, like, hold in, you know, those things, right? That's our body's natural way of processing and letting the energy, you know, out of our bodies, right? Which is so important. But
yeah,
I have, it's a process.
Several people who I'm gonna share that little soundbite with, and one particular person in mind who needs to hear that. Allow yourself to cry. Yeah. You know who you are if you're listening to this.
Yeah. And any men who are listening, I mean, I think they have it worse as well. Like, it's really stigmatized that men can't cry. And I feel like that's actually one of, this is, we're kind of side tangenting, but super important. I want to call everybody out on this so we can all band together. And really, if we're in an experience where we also see somebody crying, please hold space for them. Please do not tell them to stop crying. This breaks my heart every time I see someone telling a child this or telling, you know, a friend this, or like patting them on the back and doing the little hush, hush, it's okay. Right. Like,
be like, let it out.
Let's cry. I'm here for you. And we've got all the time. And I think, you know, this is, again, kind of a side note, like something that I very much taken on as like one of my roles in my relationship as well with my husband is allowing him as a man, a safe space to express emotions. So in any relationship, right. You know, really being cautious of where are you trying to stifle somebody's emotional release, whether it's friendships or romantic relationships, and where can you actually show up in a more open and loving space to let them know that it's cool that they're crying and it doesn't make you uncomfortable and it's okay. And like, I'm here for you. Right. And checking in with what they need instead of assuming. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah. I can see how this can get real deep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot to talk about here. This is just tip number one.
We're still on one. I love it.
Piece number one.
I love it.
So let's move on to the next one.
Sure.
Beliefs. Okay. So this is an area that everybody needs to look at because our beliefs are how we operate in the world. And most of us are walking around with a whole laundry list full of limiting beliefs, which are the beliefs that we carry around with us that are not serving our goals or our higher purpose. You know, they're actually the self-sabotaging beliefs, right? The things that are really, really keeping us stuck, keeping us, you know, addicted to sugar, keeping us, you know, where we are right now. And this is a really big topic as well. I actually host a masterclass all about limiting beliefs that I love doing. And I loved coming in your group the other day, Danny, and doing that. But it's
really, and Blood Sugar Mastery, Danielle was a guest and she did a limiting beliefs workshop for us. It was amazing. It was so great. And I'm excited to have you in our next group too. I'm already thinking, I'm like, oh, what theme can we talk about next time? Because that was so good. So I'm selfishly what do I need most? Maybe that emotion one. Connecting with my body. I need to do that for sure.
Sounds like that could be a good one. Yeah. Done. Yep. Sign me up.
All right. Awesome. Next round. You heard it here.
So these beliefs are really just an invitation for all of you to go back and think about, I mean, your childhood. This is usually the first 7 years of life is when we decide how the world works. We decide our role in the world. We decide how society works. And this is usually based off of obviously our parents, our family, our school system, media, society that we grew up in, the culture that we grew up in, right? Maybe the religious group that you grew up in. These all shape your beliefs, right? And how this really ties in is for most of us, and I'm not going to beat around the bush. I'm going to hit right to the core beliefs. Most of us are carrying around a belief that we are not enough, that we are unlovable, and that we are unworthy. And these three core belief, limiting beliefs are really, when we break it down, are really at the root for most of us, right? It's this feeling of not being worthy of the life of our dreams or the relationship of our dreams or the body that we love. I don't feel like I'm good enough. So why would I eat healthy and look after myself, right? I'm unlovable, right? Therefore I can't love myself. Like there's so many pieces that tie in here. And it's actually funny. I'll share a quick story about a client of mine named Ashley. We were talking about meal planning. She was having a really hard time. And I just want to share this example for you to see how this connects with beliefs. She was having a really hard time meal planning. She's like, I'll do it 1 week and then I can't do it the next week. Like what's going on? Like, why can't I be consistent at meal planning? There was this consistency problem. And the more we talked about it, the more we realized that at the root for her, she truly believed that she wasn't worthy of being healthy. She wasn't worthy because none of her friends and family were. So there was like this, like, why me if nobody around me can be healthy, right? If nobody around me can seem to meal plan or eat healthy, then what gives me the right to do that? So there was this really deep root of not being worthy combined with really, you know, for her, it was, you know, a big piece around not loving herself, right? Enough to do that. So we really do need to drill down into these very, you know, very deeply rooted beliefs that can be quite painful to navigate through, but also really beautiful to work through and to shift, which we can do. So that's, you know, the last thing that I'll share about beliefs is that you can change them. You can choose new beliefs at any time, which is really, really cool. Because when we start to question our beliefs from childhood, whether it's, here's another example of another one that might show up around health is, you know, I hate cooking, right? Or it's boring to cook. Those are just beliefs, right? Or I'll never give up sugar, right? Or it's going to be too hard to give up sugar. Those are beliefs I hear all the time too. It's not a fact, because a fact is universally true. And I guarantee you can find multiple people who didn't have a hard time giving up sugar, therefore proving it's false. So when you can prove it's false, you can prove that you also can believe a different way. And this does take a lot of work and a lot of like mindset work, right? And repetition and rewiring these new neural pathways. But I'm proof, and I'm sure Danny could share stories as well of like successfully doing this. I've changed so many of my beliefs. It's taken some serious commitment and time. But, you know, for example, I love failing. Like I love failing because it doesn't mean the same thing it used to me before. Failure used to mean that I was worthless and lazy and just not worthy of being here on the planet. And now failure means that I'm growing and learning, and I freaking love it when I fail at something. I'm like, yes, what did I learn? Like, this is awesome. So I completely shifted my beliefs around that, and it's completely shifted the way that I operate and I show up in the world. So that's just a simple example, but our beliefs really, you know, can either pull us down, drag us down, or they can support us and lift us up, you know, in the type of life that we want to live. So Cole's good notes on that. I mean, obviously a big topic as well.
Love it. I have to ask a quick question. It might be a Canadian word. What does Cole's notes mean? Does that mean like Cliff's notes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Got it. Must be a Canadian thing. I love learning this all the time. Yeah, I guess it is. Now we know. All my Canadian listeners are probably like, what? I didn't know that was a thing. And all the people from the US are probably like, or you know, maybe other places too, like, I don't know what that means, but I could put it together, but okay. Got it. I love it.
You got it.
I love learning. I come from a like linguistic speech therapy background. So I love learning little words and sayings from other places, and like even little things about your accent, how you say like process instead of process. I think it's so cute. I love it. So anyway, enough.
Right back at you. Right back at you. So good. So good.
Cute. All right. So I love that about the beliefs. And once again, I just wanted to reiterate those three beliefs that you said, those three core beliefs that so many of us have. And I'm thinking of like where can I write this in my house so I can just see it all the time? But we believe that we are not enough, that we are unworthy, and that we're unlovable. So maybe somewhere in your house, you know, you can write little post-its on your mirror, like, you are enough, you are worthy, you are lovable. And it's not to, you know, not put your makeup on, like, don't, you know, not get ready in the morning because, you know, it's like, oh, I'm lovable anyway, but it's like,
yeah,
believe
well,
that.
You can also do that.
You can also do that.
I spent a year because we were traveling, not wearing makeup. And that was actually a really big part of my journey in like learning to love the way I looked without having to get all dolled up. Like, that was an actual part of my journey. Cause I think there is a big part of us that, and this really actually ties into the next, inner work piece that I was going to mention around identity. So identity is the next one. And this is big work, because when we change our identity, and I don't know, I think it's, the Diltz pyramid, anybody can Google that. It's like this hierarchy of how we make change in our lives. And at the bottom of that is like changing your behavior or your actions, right? This is where we get stuck. We try to like just change the habits of what we eat, or like, you know, change our, like, quit jobs and move cities. Like, we try to change our physical environment. Yeah. And once you start working your way up the pyramid, you'll see at the very top, and the way that you actually create deep, like, lasting change that's effortless is when you change your identity. When you really get to this identity level. So I know a lot of people, you know, and I can only speak for obviously my clients. I don't know all of you listeners, right? But maybe some of you resonate with this, right? Really identify as not only just being someone who's always going to be overweight or unhealthy. I'm just that person that can never follow through on things. I'm a sugar addict. Like, any of those I am statements that are showing up for you, you kind of, these labels that you've put on yourself and you've decided this is who I am. And a big part of this is, you know, obviously our upbringing and the cultures that we're raised in and the, you know, the people that we surround ourselves with, but it's also something that we can change. And it's pretty, pretty cool and exciting to make those shifts. And, a simple example for me that I had to work with, and this really does tie into beliefs and our values and things as well. But, you know, I used to work at a big bank. Like, I used to work in this job, and then all of a sudden I'm an entrepreneur. So that was a huge identity, like, conflict for me, a huge shift, right? I know a lot of people go through this. I actually have a client right now who's just gone through a divorce. So she used to be a wife, and now who is she? So there's sometimes these big life changes, whether it's losing a job or a partner, right, can make you second guess, like, who am I, right? Like, this question that we've been asking for centuries, who are we, right? And it's such a beautiful quest to start diving deeper and deeper into that and understanding that we are not what we look like, what we do, how we eat. You know, those aren't actually identities. Those are just behaviors or external factors. And the more we, and at least for me, the more I dive into my true identity, I connect more with my spiritual self and actually understanding that, you know, who I am at my core is nothing but love and light and beauty, right? And the more we connect with that, and I know that, you know, this sounds a lot easier than it is. It's a really tricky journey to really connect with that part of you, right? And understanding that that's who you are. I think that that's where we can start to let go of the labels, right? And we can start to let go of the need to always look a certain way. Because I know for most of us, there's this fear of like, we're going to get wrinkly, we're going to get bad hair, right? We're going to look a certain way and we're going to age. So the sooner we just like accept that and know who we are beyond what we look like, it's such a beautiful place of love and freedom, you know, to come from that space. So,
wow.
It's a big journey, but it's so worth it, right? And just question your identity. Like, I think, you know, even just sitting down, a great example would be just to write down like your I am statements, you know, and it'll start off with like, I'm a wife, right? Or I'm a entrepreneur, or, you know, I'm, you know, a knitter, or like, I'm a chef, right?
Yeah.
All these things, right? And then we can start to see like, how do we see ourselves as a bad cook. Okay. That's over in this identity, right? But our the new version of ourselves. And I do this work with my clients. We call it like version 2.0. So we really step into identifying like, what's your version 2.0? Is it, you know, for example, the Danny that loves to cook and the Danny that loves to meditate, right? And it's the Danny who meditates every day. And it's so easy.
Yeah.
And, you know, these sorts of identity pieces, because in the past, you know, you were the Danny that like didn't meditate, right? So it's like really just understanding like this new version of yourself and being open to identifying with that new version of yourself and knowing that it's okay to change. And it's actually really empowering to change and really freeing.
I love all that. I love that you brought in that identity piece, because I hear so often people are so, they hitch their identity to their diagnoses, and they are one and the same. And we can't do that, because oftentimes, most often, these things are temporary. Chronic diseases that we experience, like, and a lot of, you know, people listening to the show, things like PCOS, type 2 diabetes, insulin resistance, you know, high blood pressure, anxiety, these things can be temporary. You know, so many of these things can be changed. You know, there are certain things like type 1 diabetes. We still don't have answers for that. So yes, unfortunately, that is the case for some people out there. So I do understand that. But so many of us, like when I had PCOS, I really was like so in it. It was who I was. And you know, people say like hashtag sisters. Like, I don't want to be a sister, like CYST, you know, because the cis or whatever. I'm like, I don't want to be that. I don't want to commiserate over something. I want to feel empowered, and I want to focus on that healthy version of myself. I call it my next level self. So you call it the 2.0. Yes. I love that. And I love the analogy that our business coach uses, James. He says that, what is the fastest way from point A to point B? So we are here at point A. So I like to use, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see this, but if this is point A and this is point B, the fastest way is not a straight line. It's to collapse that line, and you take on the identity of that future self. Yeah. And he says that that's, yeah, you know, the fastest way to change. And you're talking about this pyramid. I'm like, okay, same thing. So a lot of times these brilliant people and, you know, you, like, we say the same message in different ways. It's like, oh, you're understanding it that way, and you're explaining it like this. And I feel like it's that same thing, that we need to collapse that line and take on that embodiment. So when I did your limiting beliefs workshop, I was like, I am a meditator. I am. And I have been meditating. Yes. I'm like at like 8 days, I have my little calendar. It's, you know, and I woke up today, I'm like, God, I just want to feed the cats. I don't want to meditate. I just want to see the fluffs and like get on with my day. And I meditated, and my heart rate variability, like, I know I shouldn't be like, oh, it was a good session or a bad session. I'm trying not to label it. I'm trying to be like, I did the work and it's fine. But I also like to get benefit out of the things I'm doing. And my heart rate variability, meaning my resiliency towards stress, it was so high and my heart rate went down so low, which means that I'm getting to this relaxed state. So I'm like, am I getting better at it? So that's just an added bonus. So I'm like, I'm a meditator. I'm like embodying this and I'm doing it. And it's harder said than done, but like, this is part of the work. And I think that identity piece is so huge. It's just such a good thing to reflect on. It's like, what do we say that we are? Like, what are we telling ourselves every day? Because our words, our thoughts are so, so powerful. They dictate so many things. So I love that it comes from that deep. Yeah. Love it. Love all the things you're sharing. Next one on the list. Yeah. Let's do this. I love it. I'm taking notes, PS. Please go ahead.
I love it. Like exactly what you're saying, just to build off that, right? One thing that I really am trying to get out there, because the power of our words, exactly what you're saying with people with chronic, quote unquote, chronic, right? Like, we have so much power with our minds to shift things. And I think when we take on a label, like, you know, I speak specifically for people saying, I am a sugar addict, right? I hate it when people say that. I tell people not to say that, because when you commit to that identity, subconsciously, you're constantly going to be looking for proof to keep that identity. Right? Our brain will always be trying to fulfill the version of ourselves that we think we are. So if we think we're a sugar addict, we're always going to try to be a sugar addict. So when we really have to be cautious what we're labeling ourselves are, because when we do that, we don't leave any room in our subconscious brain to create a new version of ourselves. We just say, that's how it is. I'm a sugar addict. That's it. It's going to be like this for life, and it's never going to change. Right. So we have to start using more open language, like, you know, I struggle with sugar dependency, or, you know, I used to be a sugar addict, or like using language that's not so like solid, like this is a fact how it is, because it's not a fact. you don't have to be a sugar addict. You can shift out of it. And I know there are a lot of people that have given me some flack for that sentence. But, you know, I don't think that's an identity that serves any of us to hold on to. And there's probably a whole list of identities that you're holding on to that aren't serving you. And just an invitation for you to question those and call yourself out on them and question, are they fact? Or is it actually just, you know, and it might feel like fact in the beginning because you haven't known anything else. But even just looking for other people and other proof that, you know, there's other ways of kind of identifying and being is really empowering to shift out of that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And no Dan, more. I wanted to take one thing that you taught me in the limiting beliefs workshop. And it's that a good question to pose to yourself is what benefit am I getting from holding on to this identity or this belief? That one like hit me. I was like, oh yeah. Man. So sometimes when I was saying to myself, like, I'm not good at meditating, I'm not consistent with meditating, I suck at meditating. The benefit of me saying that was that I didn't have to do the work. I didn't have to stop my day. I didn't have to make any changes. I didn't have to sit still, which is hard for me. So I didn't have to do anything. I was just like, oh, I suck at meditating. So now I'm off the hook. Yeah. And it was like, wow, I just called myself out on it so badly. So that's such, I think that was such a great question that you had us pose to ourselves and, you know, pose that question to yourself. Like, what are you gaining from continuing to think this? And oftentimes it's the avoidance of having to do the work, having to feel, having to face something uncomfortable. So,
yeah. Yeah. I love that. I'm so glad that it hit home for you. You know, we are creatures always, like as human beings, we're always getting a benefit from what we're doing, even if we don't see it. Right. And oftentimes the benefit's kind of a weird one, right? Like avoiding something is a benefit, right?
Yeah.
So when we talk about, and I'm glad you brought that up because it wasn't on my list, but it's so important, right? When we talk about something like sugar, right? And sugar addiction and eating, you're getting a benefit from that. Mm-hmm. You're getting a benefit from binging on sugar, right? At the end of the day, right? And what is that benefit for you? It can be really eye-opening to understand, like, you know, what is it, an emotional benefit? Do you get to avoid something? Do you get to commiserate with your other friends who are addicted to sugar? Like, is there a sense of community, which is big when it comes to commiseration, right? Like that sense of connection and community, which we all need as humans. So yeah, thank you for reminding me of that question. That's such a powerful one. Like, we're always getting a benefit, even if we're doing something that doesn't seem healthy, or like one part of our brain thinks, well, I don't want to be doing this. Why am I doing it? We're doing it because there's another part of our brain that's getting a benefit, right? And it's sometimes helpful to just call that out and then laugh about it and move on, right? And shift out of that. So
yeah,
I'm so glad that you called yourself out on that, Danny. Good job.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on quickly. Those are kind of like the biggest ones. The next ones shouldn't be too in-depth, but values is really important. Okay, really getting clear on what's important to you in life. Oftentimes we just assume what's important to us based off of what society told us is important, like hard work and honesty and kindness, right? We just start, my health is important to me. But I encourage everybody listening to really sit down. There's so many great resources out there. A great book that I love. Anybody's not sure of where their values are at is The Values Factor by Dr. John DeMartini. That's a really great book to help you kind of pull out what are your values versus values that society put on you. And just doing some work around that. Cause oftentimes like our patterns of behaviors with food, with health can just be a matter of values, right? Like if we, and beliefs, of course, like I'll share this example from my, like growing my business. Cause this is where this kind of tied in is I had a belief that when my business grew, I would have less time for myself. And one of my highest values is freedom and like self-care and self-love. So if I believe that I'm going to lose that, which is really important to me, you can see how like subconsciously I was sabotaging myself, right? And not growing my business, not going out there and getting more clients and those sorts of things. So it's really interesting when we can start to see the values. You might value your health, but if you're coming home every night and binging, you know, on Netflix and snacks in front of the TV, you're valuing something else more than your health in that moment, right? You're valuing relaxation. You're valuing like, maybe it's time with your husband because you do it together, right? There's a different value there. And it can be helpful to understand your like hierarchy of values based off of really great places to look is obviously like what are you doing on a day-to-day basis? Like, where are you spending your time and where are you spending your money? Those are the best places to understand, like, what are you valuing, right? Are you spending money on organic vegetables or are you spending money on, you know, medications because you're not eating well, right? Like, there's a mismatch of values. So it can be helpful to understand that. And I just want to plant that seed for everyone.
So good.
The next one on the list is fears. Okay. We have to look at our deep-rooted fears. This is a big foundational piece as well. Most of us are walking around terrified of failure, terrified of success, which is a thing, mm-hmm. by the way, and terrified of death, right? Terrified of what other people are going to think about us, terrified of being judged. There's so many fears. And I think we've all had those really blown open, you know, the last year and a half for so many of us, but really understanding your fears and just fear in general and finding a way to actually make peace with fear and build a relationship with fear. Like I did with my fear of failure. I'm like, yeah, bring it on. I love it. Right. And noticing when fear comes up, like it's okay. And pushing through it anyway. And that takes a lot of practice. And working through it, but you have to start like just getting clear on what are you afraid of and what are you actually afraid of and how is that maybe showing up for you in your eating, right? And in your food decisions that you're making for yourself, right? If you're afraid of what other people are going to think of you, then when you go out to dinner with your friends and they're all having dessert, you're probably going to feel pressured to have dessert, right? Because you're afraid of being the odd one out. So there's a whole bunch of fears that we have to kind of tackle, which leads me into the next piece, right, around people pleasing. We have to take a hard look at all of our dispositions towards people pleasing. We all have this in some shape or another, right? We live in a society where it's labeled as bad to be selfish, to put yourself first, right? To do what nourishes you first. We're taught to do that last. And it is so not working. Okay. I would challenge anyone to tell me how that's working out for any of us, right? We're giving ourselves away. We're depleting ourselves of energy and life force and just selling our souls when we do that, right? As opposed to fueling ourselves first. And then don't get me wrong, it's really great to help other people and to do things for other people, but it has to come from a place where your cup is full first, okay? And it's not one or the other. You can do both. I'm not saying, you know, never help another human or, you know, support someone when they need it. I'm saying it needs to come from a place of you looking after you first and what you honoring what you actually need. And there's a lot of that that comes up when we talk about food, right? There's a lot of peer pressure. There's a lot of like somebody baked me a batch of cookies, so I guess I have to eat it because I don't want to hurt their feelings, right? There's a lot of BS that we need to call ourselves out on and really start working through that piece, which is really difficult because we also have a human need to be liked. Like that is a very primal safety mechanism that we do have and acknowledging that is important, but it has to be in balance, right? There's some work to do there and like letting go of other people's opinions, letting go of all that and really just really connecting with ourselves. So people pleasing, take a look at it. Yeah. I know that a lot of people have their hands up right now.
It's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big one. So the next one within that, you know, is boundaries. We do have to learn to set boundaries. This is a foundational piece, right? If you want to set yourself up for a lifetime of happiness, health, and freedom, you got to have boundaries. I'm reading that book that you recommended to me, Boundary Boss, as we speak. Love it. There's so many good resources out there, but yeah, setting boundaries around your food, with other people, around your energy, around your time, right? We need boundaries in all areas of our lives and really understanding how those work and practicing setting them, practicing saying no. You know, if you want to just be at home because you're exhausted and you don't want to go to the party, it's okay. Say no, right? You know, these sort of radical, like, you know, whether it's verbal, physical, energetic boundaries are so, so important for our own self-care and not giving ourselves away. Like all of these things we're doing for most people is just totally giving our power away. We're always giving our power away, right? To other people, to just have control over us. So that's a big one.
Yeah.
Moving right along. I know we spent so much time chatting about all these, so I want to just get through quickly.
Yeah. I just wanted to say really quickly that the book, like the people pleasing, the boundaries, this is all stuff that I'm working on too. And I feel like some of us can have this easier in certain areas of our life. So I feel for me, it's really easy for me to make boundaries around food. It just is. It's not as easy for me to make boundaries around exercise. It's easy for my mom to make boundaries around exercise, but not as much for other things for me, like in relationships. So this can be in all different areas of your life. And perhaps, so the book that you were referring to is Boundary Boss by Terry Cole. I absolutely love it. I'm actually in her codependency class, which is all about this urgent need to help others. And we aren't in tune with what we need. So it is this people-pleasing stuff. And so it starts, the premise is about focusing on self-care, which is why I'm really working hard on setting my meditation goal and prioritizing my self-care. And it's about setting boundaries. So perhaps some of the stuff in the book, it's not as like eye-opening for you because you know a lot of this stuff, but it's a really great resource for anyone who's struggling. And like you were talking about at the beginning about growing up in a home where it wasn't safe to express emotion. So it could have been where the family was very loud and yelling and like, don't do that. Or it could be like you said, your example where it's like, no, we didn't say anything. Like and that's how my family was. If there was a problem, we don't talk about it. We just ignore it and that's it. And so you can start to see how all these things can start happening to you and like how you ended up here. And it's putting together all these pieces that really bring everything full circle. So I love this list. I love all the things you're saying. It's so great. I'm so glad I'm taking notes.
Yay. Yes. Hopefully everybody is. I know I'm just kind of whizzing through them now because there's just so much, right? You'll have to have me back on. We'll have to dive in more of these, of course.
For sure. And then we'll talk about your course at the end, which I'm sure you go into depth with all of these in your course. So
we do.
Awesome.
We do. Yeah. Yeah. So the next one, and this should actually probably be at the top of the list. I don't know why I have it written down here, but you know, at the root, you know, if any of you relate to addictive behaviors, not being a sugar addict, but addictive patterns and behaviors of numbing out, we have to take a hard look at healing our traumas. So trauma is at the root of every single addiction. I love, if anybody is curious why I'm saying that with so much confidence, please look into Gabor Maté and his work with addictions and, you know, really understanding that when trauma happens to us, it shapes our cells and our minds and our energy bodies in such a way that sets us up for needing to escape, right? Needing to numb out and using drugs or alcohol or sugar or Netflix. I mean, it's all, you know, all the kind of numbing out behavior really comes from this deep trauma. And that can look different for all of us. You know, most of us have big T trauma. And a reminder, I've actually just had to realize this for myself as a young child. You might look back now and think, like, for example, for me, one of my traumas is my dad and brother used to have like yelling matches at each other. And as a very energetically sensitive girl, you know, that was very traumatic for me when they would really argue and like get into it. It was so traumatic that I remember having to leave the house and go walk around the neighborhood by myself because I just couldn't be in the house as like a 10-year-old, right? Like I was like, I'm out. So looking back at that now, or if that happened now, it wouldn't be traumatic to adult Danny. Like I'm good. Like I would just leave. Like that's their business. But to a young human, that's a big T trauma. That's a, oh my gosh, am I in danger? Is my life in danger? What's happening? I don't understand what's really going on. Now I do as an adult. I'm like, oh yeah, they were just having at it. And it's like, that's whatever, right? Nothing bad happened other than the yelling. But for me as a young girl, that was a big T trauma because I felt like my life was in danger, right? So just understanding that, you know, we all have big T trauma, you know, and it might not be, you know, really scary things like, you know, sexual assault or murder or, you know, these really huge things or, you know, accidents, right? Or near death experiences. Like, you know, there's a lot of really, you know, ones that get talked about a lot, but there's, you know, there's other ways to have big T trauma as well. And then we all have little T trauma, like the things that still shape our view of the world and our energy and our beliefs. Like it really shapes us, you know, to learn, like, it's not safe to do this, or it's not safe to dress sexy, or I'll get unwanted male attention, right? There's a lot of like fears and, you know, obviously stuck emotions and just a whole conversation around trauma. So I really please encourage anyone who resonates with that or knows that there's some unresolved trauma to please seek out, you know, professional support. You know, that is something that is very, very important to be held in a safe space with a practitioner or a therapist or someone who knows about trauma that can work with you through that. But it is a really big piece. If we don't deal with our quote unquote demons, they're going to keep showing up, and it's probably going to be around numbing out patterns. Maybe today it's, you know, it's sugar, and maybe tomorrow it's cocaine. I don't know. Hopefully not, but you know, it really is at the root with a lot of these behaviors, and it's really important for all of our healing really to go through that, right, in different ways. Yeah.
So good.
So next up is self-love. So again, coming back to this belief that most of us feel like we're not lovable, and when we do that, or that our love is conditional, right? When we do that with other people, you know, that's really coming from a place of not loving ourselves. And I wholeheartedly believe, like in my work and my journey, when we truly love ourselves, like truly love ourselves unconditionally, it's effortless to look after ourselves, right? We want to nourish ourselves. We want to eat good foods. We want to move our body. We want to hydrate. We want to sleep. Like these things, and I've noticed this in myself. There are periods of time where I'm like really in love with myself, and it seems so easy to be healthy and look after myself. And then there's times where I'm like, not really happy with myself. And it becomes very difficult, you know, then all the self-sabotaging will creep in, and, you know, I want to eat the junk, or, you know, I feel really disconnected. So we have to find a way. And I know this is a lifelong journey to really learning to love ourselves unconditionally, meaning doesn't matter what we do, how shitty we are, if we yell at someone, if we are in, you know, in bed all day watching Netflix, like, you know, whatever we do, we still are whole and complete and incredible human beings. So that's a journey for all of us to go on. And, you know, a really, really beautiful one to learn, you know. And I know you were talking earlier, Danny, about writing things on your mirror. This is beautiful as well too. There's lots of self-love practices that I love, like eye gazing in the mirror, or even just connecting with your body and connecting with your naked body. You know, it really, you know, connecting and sending love to the cells in your body. We got to get back to love, people. We got to get back to love.
Yes, I love it.
Yeah. Okay, so the last couple really quickly. I know that we've been chatting forever. My gosh, okay. There's so much to talk about.
Yeah.
Is just an awareness for all of us that this inner work, like on a bigger scale, well, number one is learning to let go of control. Like this whole illusion of control is something that I really encourage everybody to take a look at in their own lives. It's been a big piece of my work and my journey in letting go of that, learning to surrender, learning to trust in whatever way that feels right to you. But a big like underlying piece of that is this propensity or addiction that we all have to being busy all the time. So we live in a society that teaches us that our worth is dictated by how much we get done in a day. And that needs to stop, because that is not at all what makes you worthy. And, you know, it's really difficult when we're constantly being bombarded with that messaging, and our whole lives we've been taught to really just always be doing things, right? Being busy all the time. And when we learn to slow down, that's where the magic happens. And I love, like, our business mentor always says the rest is the work. And I always thought, what's he talking about? Like, the rest just seems like I'm not doing anything. I need to be doing something in order to like be making these shifts in my inner world. And when we're talking about the inner work, we have to create space and silence and stillness in order for any of the answers to come up. And that's often the hardest part. And I know you're experiencing that now. It's like, oh, I have to sit in meditation with my own thoughts. Like it feels really uncomfortable because most of us have never slowed down.
Yeah.
Most of us are go, go, go from the moment we get up to the moment we go to bed. And that's how I used to live. I used to pride myself on all the multitasking that I could do. And very quickly noticed that my anxiety, my stress, my binge eating, you know, all of it was coming from that place of just being so disconnected from myself because I never spent time with myself. I was always out there doing something, checking something off a list, and learning to slow down has been one of the most rewarding, you know, processes of my life. And now it's a mandatory practice in my daily life and my, you know, I take myself away. I know you know this, like every quarter I go away on a little Danny retreat just to hang out with myself and learning to love myself, learning to just be in stillness with myself is where all of this inner work starts to click and where it all starts, all the answers start to come through for you and the healing and the awareness. So just an encouragement for all of you, you know, running around busy bees. I know we're heading into the holiday season, you know, gift yourself the downtime, right? You don't have to do everything. Mm-hmm. You can spend a whole day on Netflix and still be worthy and still be lovable and still be enough.
Yes.
If that's what you needed that day, that's okay. Right.
Yeah. So, and that's also how we numb in a way too. It's a way of escaping Absolutely. And avoiding having to feel feelings. It's like, oh, I just have to do this thing. And that is one of 100%. My major ways of avoiding for sure. Like my, you know, some people might numb out and do Netflix, and mine is let's answer more emails and respond to more messages on Instagram. And that's what it looks like for me, because it's like, oh, cool. I can help someone. I can be of use. I can be of value. And it's like, what am I really needing in this moment? Like, you know, really great.
Yeah. When we do that, right, we're reflection. Just constantly giving our energy away, giving our energy away. Right. And it's, I can relate with that, Danny. That was me too. Like learning to set boundaries around my email and messages, that like, it's still a work in progress, and social media is built to be addictive. Like it's built, and then add on like running a business, right? You're just like, there's so many excuses to be online all the time.
Totally.
Right? But it really is, when you can call yourself on that, like it's not only it's that addiction and that habit, right? But it's also like just totally disconnecting me from myself, and I'm avoiding something, right? There's some pain or emotion that needs to come up that I'm just trying to stuff down. So it can be it can be a journey, and that's why it's so important to get support when you're going through all this, right? With Danny or reach out to me, you know, anybody that you feel safe with as you start working through this inner stuff. It's very easy to just quit on yourself when it gets hard, unless you have the proper support to kind of help you navigate through those bumps along the road, which there will be. So
yeah. And so can you tell us a little bit more about where we can find you and your program? And because I think a lot of people listening, you know, a lot of people need to do the physical work, that which, you know, like changing their diet and, you know, getting those things right. But I think so many people listening, it's like, I want to have a place to send all those people, because I don't know this stuff you do. So, you know, it's just another Danielle, different Danielle, but,
I would be happy
another blonde Danielle. So not much difference between us. I think we're both Enneagram ones anyway. So
you don't know yet. Undecided on that.
Still undecided. Okay.
But you know, apparently, you know,
It. I know for you.
Yeah. Thanks for that invite. I'd love to share more. I've got a lot of really great resources. One other thing that I have to say to add to list that I forgot to mention, and I can't believe I forgot this, because as we're obviously heading into the holidays, this is a really, really important one to look at, is really connecting with, and I know this for most people as a root cause of why we're turning to food, is that we don't have any other sources of joy in our life.
Oh,
so food has, I know, I just hit you all with that one. Because I'm no sugarcoating it.
Wow.
For a lot of us, and I've worked with, you know, countless women now who have really had to come to terms with this and understanding that food is the only joy. You know, sugar has become the only joy. And I actually first learned this when my mom told me this. You know, my mom is still very much addicted to sugar, and I was trying to uncover like what's going on. And, you know, for her, that's the thing. Without sugar, there's, you know, and obviously me, I mean, but there was no joy. There was that daily hit of joy for her and for so many. And really coming to terms with that is a tough truth to swallow, but is really empowering as well. I want to come at it from that way, because then you can start to discover other sources of joy. You can get ahead of the cravings for sugar by, you know, bringing joy in your life. And I know we're heading into the holidays, so this joy piece is something really important to look at. And I personally, this is a question I'm asking myself every day, you know, into the holidays, is how can I allow for joy and play and fun in my day to day? That's a question I'm asking myself. So at least one thing every day, like, am I going to have a silly dance party? Am I going to go out in the sauna? Am I going to meet a friend? Like, what am I going to do for joy today? Right. Am I going to record this podcast, which totally gives me joy, but really connecting with that and building in, you know, getting honest with yourself about that and starting to build, just know there's a whole world out there full of joy. You just maybe haven't been looking for it for a while. And it's just going to take some looking in the right places for that. And the last thing around like the holidays, especially, is connection. So for most of us, we use food for connection, right? It connects us with, you know, memories of people from childhood. It's been used for connection for so long. So oftentimes we'll eat a food you know, I used to eat crepes smothered in sugar because it reminded me of my grandma and it made me feel connected with her because she always made those growing up. So, you know, food carries a lot of this tie-in with connection, and the lack of connection that we're experiencing now more than ever is really scary to me because that is a big source of unhappiness and you know, these addictive patterns for most of us. So as you head into the holidays, you know, remember that it's not about the food, it's about the connection. And how can you build that in, you know, connecting number one with yourself, but also with other people, with friends, with family, like how can you make sure to get those connections, you know, on a daily basis, if not, you know, on a, you know, every couple of days, right? Making sure that you're filling your connection cup.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah, those are also good.
Really, really important.
Yeah. We don't have other sources of joy. I mean, wow. That's just, it's so simple. It's so obvious. It's right there, but it's like, you don't even think about it. Oh my goodness. Yes.
No. Yeah. It's a conversation coming up a lot right now in my groups that I host as we're heading into the holidays, like people really honoring like, wow, I don't know how to experience other joy. And half of that is because our dopamine receptors have been hijacked, right? And we're operating at like joy level 10,000 when normal people are like level 100, right? So when we balance our brain chemicals out, we can start to actually notice the joy of like cuddling your cat. I know that brings me so much joy.
Oh, so much joy.
Or I'm looking watching at you, the Frankie. Sunset. Yeah. Or, you know, having a good chat with a friend or cooking a nourishing meal. I mean, that is like, I love cooking. That brings me joy. Maybe it doesn't for you, but anybody listening, right? But, you know, having a lazy Sunday morning in bed, having breakfast in bed, right? Like going for a nice nature walk, having good sex, like all these really, really good things that, you know, give us dopamine and give us that sense of joy, but we might just not have in our day, right? And I think it just starts with asking ourselves that question of what am I going to do to that's going to bring me joy today? Is it spending time reading and cuddling up in front of the fire, or is it, you know, something else, right? Going for a walk or having a hot bath, you know, whatever that is for you, but there's so much.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is so awesome. Yeah. Tell everyone where they can find you. And I know that people are going to want to dive into this work more because you can see that this isn't something you want to do on your own because it will take you 6 years to do on your own, right?
I will have to say that I have not been on my own for the last 6 years.
Okay, good.
Absolutely not. No, the first 2 years of like my journey through sugar and trying to grow my business, I was alone. And then I realized like, I can't do this alone. Like, and that's why I started having success is because I started reaching out in communities and I hired a coach. I work with a therapist. Like I have mentors, like I've done it all. I've worked with healers. Like I've done some deep work, people. And there's always been by getting supported by others and in community, which is so important. So I have definitely never been alone and I will never try to do anything on my own again, because that's not how we are as creatures. We're meant to be in community. We're meant to grow together. We'll never be successful if we're trying to struggle through things on our own. So I don't, that's a whole topic for another day too, but I can just say that.
So good.
Definitely haven't been alone. And I would love to keep the conversation going. I have, you can head on over to my website, DanielleDame.com. And I actually have a free resource there that if any of you connected with like the emotional conversation that we just touched on, there's a 3-part video series called the Stress Eating Workshop Series. That's videos really diving deeper into this emotional conversation, and you'll get workbooks and all sorts of good stuff. That's a free resources for you on my website. And then you can also find more about, you can come and get on some of my wait lists for my signature program is called Break Free from Sugar. And that's a 10-week program where we dive not only into detoxing from sugar, but also more importantly into this deeper inner work, really uncovering what are your root causes, what are the foundational pieces for you, and doing that together in a community, because we're meant to grow together, not alone. And I'm in the middle of one of those programs right now. And it's just so incredible watching the shifts already taking place, you know, in just a couple of weeks, mentally, emotionally, physically. I mean, it's amazing. I love it.
Oh, I love it. So that's so good. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on and for all of the wisdom that you shared. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are going to have to listen to this again, not driving in their cars or washing their dishes or whatever. Well, some of my friends listen to my podcast and they call it hashtag dishes with Danny. So this time it's dishes with Danny squared. So next time they'll have to listen and take notes like I did, but this is such great information. Thank you so so much for coming on. And I'm looking forward to chatting with you again. This is so wonderful.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you everyone for listening all the way through. I hope I didn't overwhelm you and would love to, you know, share any more resources. Please never hesitate to reach out, send me a message, and would love to connect.
Yeah, awesome. All right. Thanks, Dan. Bye-bye.
Oh my goodness. Wasn't that episode just amazing? It's so different than the stuff that I talk about here. And it's so, so important. It's so complementary to the work that I do. And I am really hoping to be able to collaborate with Danielle on something in the future, because I think that with, you know, our Danielle forces combined, we can really, really help so many people. And so check out Danielle's website, DanielleDame.com. I linked all her information in the show notes. You can follow her on Instagram. You can check out her program. And yeah, also remember our sponsor for today's episode, Rasa. If you are in need of reducing your caffeine consumption, if you want more energy, if you want to sleep better, if you want to support your adrenals for better blood sugar regulation, Rasa is the thing to get. I'm telling you, I love it. So great. Thank you, Rasa, for sponsoring the show. And remember to use the code Danielle Hamilton Health for 15% off. So thank you again for listening to this show. I know it was a long one, but I hope you really liked it. And I did take a few weeks off because I was sick. And so I will probably bring you another episode next week. So thank you again for listening. Love you guys. You are the best. And I will see you soon. Have a good one. Bye.